Hello, welcome to Making Creativity Pay, a podcast where I speak to people in the creative arts about the business and marketing side of their work. Building an audience and getting paid for the effort and skill you put into your work doesn't happen out of nowhere, and I'll be discussing what has and hasn't worked for our guests. In this episode, I spoke to Stuart Goldsmith, a comedian who's run the hugely successful Comedians Comedian podcast for almost a decade. I started out by asking him about how he got started and how it compares to now, where it seems pretty much everyone has a podcast.
It kind of felt like everyone had a podcast back then.
Yeah.
I felt like, oh, I'm so late to the party. I really did. I don't know why. I suppose, did it feel like that back then? I'm not sure. I certainly knew a few people. Helen Zaltzman, I knew socially, and I knew that she knew about podcasts. So I sort of bought her a coffee and picked her brains about podcasts. And there was a very strong sensation that I was not the first person to do that. But I think that the reason... Now, which way round was it? Did Spotify buy Gimlet for $100 million last year or 2 years ago or something? Yeah. I think the reason they did that is that the industry vibe on podcasting is that there is still enormous room for growth. So everyone's got a podcast, but everyone should have a podcast, and not everyone's got a podcast yet. So that's where I think we are at the moment. But you were asking about the sort of the background of it. I started the podcast maybe almost 9 years ago. A couple of different things for me. The one was that I'd been on a TV show that was like RuPaul's Drag Race for comedy, and I'd found the constant interviewing process to be incredibly reductive and painful. I thought, you've got some great comics here and you're asking us really boring questions about each other. You know what I mean? How do you feel a threat by this person? Are they a threat to you this week and what have you? And they just seem to be getting it all wrong. They were making TV and I don't know anything about that. But from my perspective, I was frustrated that they were asking the wrong questions. At the same time, I had an idea to improve my own comic writing ability by... I sort of had this idea. I like having ideas. And I thought, why don't I offer a really good headline comic who I think is a brilliant writer... if I can get enough people involved and we all put 10 or 20 quid in, can you give a sort of masterclass in how you write to me and some of my peers? And they went, absolutely not. And then I had a really nice coffee with them and they told me loads of comedy writing secrets, and then I forgot them all and walked away thinking I should have recorded that. And that was basically it, really. I thought I should create an archive of me. Not my journey to learn, like I wasn't in it, and I still try and be invisible in the show. A few years ago, I started doing these things called post-ambles, where I would give the audience a chance to catch up on me and my life and what I'm up to, because it was pointed out to me that the invisibility, which I thought made for a good interview, did, but didn't make necessarily for a great calling card for my own ability. I also have historically had a tendency to be too self-deprecating on the show. So I feel I've earned the right to disparage my own material and go, oh God, I just do the same old shit. And I realised late in the day that I've broadcast that message to millions of people. Whereas really, like, I'm incredibly proud of what I do. I like being diffident about it and I like being cool about it. And I sort of realised, oh, let them know me more and back myself a bit more. But the reason I mention that is it clashed with my initial idea to create an archive for myself. I had no idea that new comics and people who wanted to be a comic would listen to it. I just didn't think of that. I thought, I want to record all these and I might as well put them on the internet. And maybe I'll make it like a little radio show, you know, with the intention that I would basically not be there and it would just be a talking head going, I think this and I think this and I did this and I do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know if you know, but you've filled up Apple Podcasts. So, you know, you're only allowed 300. So it's...
Do you know what? Yeah. That was made clear to me when I was at around 250. I thought, oh, that will happen one day. And I haven't thought of it since. There we go. That's interesting.
Yeah, because Spotify, funnily enough, I was able to go back to episode one and had a little listen of that. Mm-hmm. The origin story.
God, but awful. I imagine I say, every 20 seconds, for which I apologise.
No, it's pretty polished. But yeah, so Spotify, you can go back to episode one. Apple, it's only back to episode 95. So there's a couple of years that have just kind of disappeared off Apple now. So I'll probably talk about old stuff later. But I mean, do you do much around repurposing stuff and looking to put that back on?
No, I mean, you've just made me go, God, that's a good point. There's enough now. The first 100 were good. Why don't I take the first 100 down and sell them? That's my instinct, because I'm a, there is a part of me that is a hustler, right? Like a part, former street performer, take a drink now. The secret of my success as a street performance was partly talent and partly skill and a lot of hustle. You have to be, in that game. You've got to go, you've got to think to yourself, there's a crowd there, that guy's show is finishing. If I stand on my suitcase right now and shout at them, I'll be able to start my show because some of them will wander over. So you're constantly grifting. Grifting, I don't know if grifting is the right word, you're constantly hustling. And my hustle brain went, oh, that's a good point. I've got enough content now that it would be completely reasonable to take the first 75 or the first 100 off and then sell them. But then I also have a relationship with my listeners, which is valuable to me and which is flavoured with the desire. That's the other great thing about street performing is you don't charge admission. You put it there and then you say, do you want to pay for it? So we were all, the thing I'm fond of saying is, me at Covent Garden 20 odd years ago, we were all training ourselves to crowdfund before the term existed. So that was it. That's how it works, crowdfunding. So as much as I might like to, the thoughts I had were like this cascade very quickly. I thought, when you said that a minute ago, I thought, oh, I could take them down and sell them. And I thought, no, I could take them down and make them available exclusively to the Insiders Club because I have a kind of paywall element. And then the next thought is, well, actually, because my show is archival, there is advertising revenue, a small amount, like a pitiful argument, often pitiful, sometimes, oh, that's nice, sometimes a nice treat. And that advertising revenue comes from, it comes from the whole of the back catalogue being available.
Yes.
So my numbers being attractive to advertisers is probably to do with how much archival material there is, and it's not like it's topical, it doesn't go out of fashion, it's still worth listening to episode one with Rob Deering. So yes, so I probably won't do that. And also, as a, here's a term I learned recently, solopreneur. I hate the term, but it is useful. It's useful. It's not a thing I aspire to. Some people aspire to it. I don't aspire to it. I think it's a horrible weasel word, but it is sort of what I am. So it's useful for recognizing resources out there that are aimed at solopreneurs.
Yes.
So with that in mind, it's great to think, oh, that's a good idea. I'll do that. Should I do that? Would it be useful? Would it be negative? Well, I won't do that. Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the questions I've got later on, but actually talk about it now, is that, you know, you're a comedian, a podcaster, but like you said, solopreneur. So, you know, you're social media manager, you're a email marketing manager, you know, you're new business development manager, and you know, all these kind of things. And I mean, how much
I am sackably bad at nearly all of those ones. Certainly social media, certainly stuff like that. I am obsessed with business development. That's true. I am a keen business development person. And I also have this incredible resource, which is the listenership of the podcast. And that was a sort of a half deliberate thing. I love asking for help, and people would write to me and say, I love your show. There's a guy wrote to me and said, I'm really enjoying the podcast at the minute. Keep it up. And I just noticed in his email signature, he did something in, the name of the website eludes me, but it was to do with A/B testing for marketing. And I emailed him back and said, oh, thanks, mate. And now he's a really good friend. And he's given me invaluable advice on stuff. So the podcast and the listenership of the podcast, and specifically the that tiny percentage of the listenership that are motivated to become insiders and kind of get on board my squad and offer me loads of free help and advice, just like, it's like living in a think tank. And that aspect of it, I am in love with. That's probably, in all honesty, I mean, the podcast income has kept me going through the pandemic, and it's enabled me to survive in a way that has been enormously fortuitous and also a thing I worked hard for. But the most thrilling aspect of the podcast, obviously the interviews I love, but it's access to the think tank, really, of people with ideas. And I can say, you work in blah, blah, blah. I'm literally, after this, I'm having a chat with someone who I met through the podcast who is a hostage negotiator. They do other stuff as well, but we're going to talk about coaching together. I'm electrified by that. What a wonderful thing. So how did I get to that? Sorry, I'm all over the place. I think the thinky aspect of, what was the question? If you remind me of the question,
Dan, you know, you've got many hats.
I've got many hats. Exactly. You know, exactly. So business development, really, I love asking questions. I love talking to people and going, like, I have never had a real job. I've never worked in an office. I don't understand what that is. I don't understand the structure. I do now because of other elements of my business, but I'm fascinated with it. And I feel in some aspects, because I took this kind of dropout route of going street performer, circus school, all that stuff, and like never filled in my record of achievement to this day. You know, it's a document we used to get at school. Because I did that, I think part of me has been a frustrated business person for a long time. So I love business development. But yes, the wider point you're making is that I do lots of jobs. I'm a solopreneur. I run it all myself. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, some of that, like you said, is you enjoy. I imagine some of it is a real grind to kind of get out.
I have outsourced most of the grindy bits. I have an excellent editor called Nathan who edits the show. I just gave this tip to someone else in a podcast support group on Facebook earlier. They were going, oh, the edit's such a drag. And I was like, do you know what I did to change my life? I pay a fan of the show to log every episode minute by minute. So now my edit, I'm in charge of the edit, but I don't log it and I don't edit it. I get the log sent to me and I go, okay, line by line by line, that's the best bit. Use that, take that, put that in the Insiders Club, take that. That's special, that's too nerdy. Put it in the Insiders Club in the paywall bit. And then I colour them in blue and then I forward them to my editor and I don't do any of that. Because I do have a sort of burgeoning understanding of key principles for solopreneurs. Key principles for anything. Key principles are trying to make anything work. And I get to, because I'm the CEO and sole member, I get to go, oh, I'll try that today. And some of those things have stuck really well over the years. So one of the key principles is outsource everything you're not brilliant at. I would love to, or that you don't enjoy, you know, one of the things I cannot outsource is inviting people to be on the show because it's based on personal relationships. And I find that the grindingest grind because I've got a strong policy on diversity and inclusivity. And also, I have to hunt down people. I can't just sort of sit back and think, oh, I saw their show 10 years ago. I'll invite them. There are certain Venn diagram into which potential guests for my show have to fit. It isn't just anyone funny. So that is the most complex part of the process, and it's the one I wish I could outsource. And I do occasionally dream of going, I know someone who's like a comedy booker for TV. I wonder if they'd like to moonlight for 50 quid a guest to try and just take it all out of my hands. Because if someone came to me, like so much of my, I don't know if we're sort of steering out of the analytics side, but so much of my working life is about anxiety and procrastination because of anxiety and managing those things, that if I could employ someone to book all the guests and put the things in my diary so that I woke up and went, who have I got today? This person. Great. That would change my life. I'd be so much happier. And I'm constantly trying to think of ways to do that, but I never quite get to it. What I need is like a podcasting block on a Tuesday of 4 hours and it just pings in and I know I'm going to podcast, but I don't know who it is, so I can't stress about it. And then at 8 a.m. I get, it's Alexi Sale, and I've got 2 hours to watch as much Alexi Sale stuff as I can and then 2 hours to record with Alexi Sale. That would be my dream life.
So in terms of getting guests, I mean, how much is it, you know, your personal relationships or friend of a friend versus someone's got a special out or a tour going out in 2 months?
Great question. No one has ever asked me that question, Dan. Thank you. A lot of it is my personal relationships. However, these days, because it's been going for so long, a lovely thing has happened whereby acts who consider themselves students of the podcast are now famous enough and successful enough and good enough to be great gets for the podcast. Sindhu V, Rosie Jones. Rosie Jones is on the show. It goes out tonight. And she said on the show, she said that when she was a researcher, before she was a comic, she would listen to my podcast and she decided to herself, I'm going to be on that. Not I hope to be on that, but she decided to be on that. She's inevitable. She is comedy's Thanos. And then she was on it and she was super overjoyed about it. So with something like that, with someone like Rosie, I think she had a show out and I saw on British Comedy Guide, oh, she's plugging her show at the moment. She might be amenable to an approach and it's perfect timing.
Yeah.
So I do take things like that. There are a couple of people in the States, a couple of PR people in the States who I've got relationships with, and they say, this person's got a thing coming out. And I go, I've got to watch it first. I've got to watch enough of it to go, this is thrilling. I definitely want to talk to them. Because obviously there's a lot of people who aren't, like the rules for the show are, the only rule is I have to feel I can learn from you. And there are people out there who I think, I get what you're doing. That's great. I'm not super excited about it. So I have to apply a kind of filter. But it is satisfying now that there's a stage where people are excited to be on it. Not everybody, but it is, you know, it's some people grew up with it, you know. So I do worry, like I've had some classic, I've had Arthur Smith, Joe Brand, Alan Davies, I've had Jeremy Hardy, bless him, you know, like so many of the old kind of wonderful, the older, God, sorry, everyone, the older wonderful greats. But more recently, it's people who haven't been interviewed to death, who are happy to open up, who are excited to be on the show. People like Olga Koch and Catherine Bohart, who are, or Ishan Akbar, you know, who, where you kind of think they're excited to be there. I'm thrilled to talk to them and it's lovely that they're excited. And they're really sort of, they know what the show is. So those are the most exciting ones. It always helps when PR jogs my hand. And if they've made the approach, fantastic. You know, Piff the Magic Dragon is going to be the next episode in 2 weeks. Or whatever the word for next is, next but one episode. And his PR got in touch. And I was like, oh, sure, of course I'll do John. Do you know what I mean? He's a guy I know from the Edinburgh Festival. So I can go back and go, it's all right, we'll take your PR out of the loop. Yeah, let's make it happen. So some PR, some, and for some bigger acts, some of it back in the day, there was some guile. Some of it was, I'm in town in Glasgow doing a weekend of shows. And I've seen that the big famous comic on in the massive theatre is Comedian X. So I will inveigle my way into their life and go, you might also be bored in town on that Saturday afternoon. I will. God, I'd love you to be on the podcast. I've done that a few times. And some of them, the most pleasing ones are things like Ross Noble emailing me and using the code phrase that means I'd like to be on the show and I'm a listener. And I was like, come on, you know. So there are all sorts, any and all sorts. And these days it is more efficient as I do more and more with my daytime. It's more efficient when PR get in touch and I can say yes, 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 yes. The downside of that often, and it is, you know, my listenership is niche. It is. I am not the biggest podcast in comedy. So sometimes I'm on PR mail outs, they'll send me someone and I'll say, yes, please. And I won't hear back. And I'm like, God's sake, just take me off the list if you don't want to. Do you know what I mean? But then equally, I understand they have to come back and go, we've offered you this. And some people go, I don't want to do that one. Well, fine. You know, we've all got a place in the firmament.
Yeah, absolutely. So how much has remote interviewing changed the dynamic in terms of, you know, kind of how you podcast, the kind of questions you can get through and whether people are more intimate because they're at home and relaxed versus in person or the opposite?
I would always much rather do it in person every single time. But I used to believe it wasn't possible to get a good version of my show out of a remote record. And I no longer believe that. So there are some comics in America who I've had, Gary Goldman. And it was an absolute nightmare trying to get him on the, not to get him on the show. He's really up for it. But then the first time we tried to record, he just, his signal was wobbling in and out. And I was like, Gary. And he was like, Stu. And then it ducked and it died and it dipped. And we both were just like, there's no more time. It's 40 minutes. We haven't got time to get properly into it now. Let's reschedule. And I'm like, God, I was losing sleep last night because I was so nervous about this interview. So there are things like that. And that was one of the first ones I did. I've done someone like Robert Popper. I'd much rather have been in the room with Robert Popper to be able to get a, you know, to really go for it. Having said that, there were ones where I was in the room with people where either we didn't hit it off or they didn't. They were a bit interviewed out. Some people, if they are on a junket, that's a downside. I mean, it used to be someone would land and I'd go, do you want to be on the show? And now you feel like, oh, I've gone into their podcast offers folder because there are so many podcasts now. And of course, you know, so again, I'm tripping myself up, but if you remind me of the question, you could take it out of the edit and I could seamlessly go back in. or leave this in as a fascinating glimpse behind the wizard's curtain.
So there's kind of several different strands to Comedians Comedian. You've got the regular podcast and then you've got the Insiders Club.
I mean, for sure.
I can remember listening years ago when you were talking about the Insiders Club then. So I know it's been around for quite a while. I mean, how long have you been running that?
So in my memory, and I'm happy to be corrected on this, I never even mentioned money for the first 3 years because it never occurred to me. And then someone gave me 20 quid. They pushed it into my hand and then I mentioned it. And then people started pushing money into my hand at festivals. And then I don't know which way round. I think it was that way round. So that gave me the idea to go, I should say, hey guys, do you want to donate to the show? You might not see me at a festival. Do you want to chuck a tenner to me via PayPal? And then I built a kind of PayPal button to do that. And the word built is a vast overestimation of my capabilities. It's very easy to do and it took me ages. So then, because someone told me afterwards that what I had done was called, I think it's called permission marketing. I had given everyone a free thing for ages and then said, would you mind paying? And suddenly loads of people paid. That it didn't sustain at that thing, because obviously people were like, sure, and then that was it. So, but that initial thing of, oh, holy shit, this isn't just a fun thing that gets my name out there. This is a potential income stream. So then I had donors. People would donate in cash, and there's a special thing you used to say, or people would donate via PayPal buttons. And I resisted recurring payments, I think solely because Richard Herring was doing them, and I didn't want to feel like I was copying him or be perceived. He started his show, the Rahelisper show, weeks after I started The Comedian's Comedian, and I have heard it said on YouTube comments, Goldsmith just nicked the idea, and I fucking got there first. So I have always... And they're radically different shows, and he was podcasting for years before I was, but my show is in no way a copy of Rahelisper. So I didn't do recurring ones, I think pretty much just because Richard was doing them. And then... I would email back everyone individually. Someone would send me £2. Jesus, some kid in New Zealand said, I've just done my first gig because of you. Here's the money from my first paid gig sent to me via PayPal. Wow, what a rush. It was great. So but I would email back everybody individually, and that became... It wasn't happening all the time, and I declared every cent of it. But, I needed a more workable system. So then I went to South by Southwest Tech Festival in Texas for a couple of years. And podcasting there is at least 5 years ahead of us, at least. So back then it was probably 10 years ahead of us in a sort of weird slidey scale. And I just sort of went, oh, this is like, people are seeing this like an industry and like a business. But I like giving the stuff away, and I like the street performer in me. I don't want to charge for it. So I set up recurring donations. And I've got a bunch of people. You could donate any amount you want. You just get the show. Yep. You don't get anything extra. Then I thought it would be good to have adverts on the show, because I was looking into all different sorts of dynamic advertising, and ended up going with one particular company called Acast, having sort of had the idea myself in America, and found out there's a guy called Matt. I can't remember his surname, but he's one of Jimmy Pardo's crew. And he invented a dynamic ad thing, and I had big conversations with him before realizing, oh, this is only if you have 1 million downloads a day does it become worthwhile, you know. So I wanted to be able to put advertising on the show. I resisted, but felt like I can't not. And then I thought, if I put advertising on it, all my donors will leave. And I don't now think they would have. But then I thought, if I give them something extra, like a whole extra podcast, a whole extra RSS feed with lots of different stuff on it, then they stop being donors and they're paying for a thing. So if they're paying for that thing and everyone else has to listen to an advert, then I'm sort of doubling up on the income streams. And then I got really excited about, like, that was like the sort of the greasy machinations behind it. And then I was really excited because I went, I've got a whole, this is like a TV channel. If you've got a podcast thread, but it doesn't have to just be The Comedian's Comedian. So I did loads of different content. We had You Interview Stu. We had a strand called Comedy Critique where people would send in 5 minutes. I'd strip out the audio. We'd play it to the listeners, the Insiders Club, and they would have the opportunity to get back via a Slack workspace or by emailing me with their feedback, and then I'd read out their feedback on the next episode. We did a bunch of them. People really enjoyed it, but it was a mega heavy edit, and it wasn't for that many people, ultimately. So it didn't feel efficient. So, but we had a bunch of different things. Listeners, Insiders Club members could interview me about their thing. So a lawyer interviewed me about how comedy pertains to law and stuff like that. Brilliant. Now it has coalesced into, when you join the Insiders Club, you get access to the Insiders Club feed, which has that historic stuff on it. But what it has is almost every episode now, I don't guarantee it, but almost every episode has between 20 to 60 minutes of extra content. So what goes out on the regular feed is the show with advertising. But if you're in the Insiders Club, you get the show with no advertising, and you also get the extras from the show. And you also get access to a Slack workspace, which I would say half of the insiders have joined, probably more than that, actually. And that is like a sort of ongoing, I don't know if you use Slack. It was a sort of cut and shut of me going, like, Patreon. Should I talk to you about platforms? Should we have
it's talking about, the Slack. Yeah, I'm on the Slack channel. It's really interesting to kind of, that's quite, something quite different.
Oh, good. I'm glad you think so. I feel like it's different. I don't cultivate it in with as much effort as I should, but I feel like that makes it quite genuine. Like, I occasionally cultivate the Facebook group, which is mad. It's got 7,000 people in it. And if I put a picture of me and my new baby, I get 400 likes. You can't contact those 7,000 people. I don't know how to. It's madness. But it's a really good place for organic stuff to happen. And I prune the Facebook group relentlessly. And it has an almost zero dickheads policy. Like, if someone... Like, I am guilty. This is a whole other thing. But I just have a rule that you just have to be polite. You can't go in there and say a comic is shit. And if you do, you get warned. And if you do it again, you get booted out. I realise that enforcing politeness is not the same thing as a sort of strict moral code, but I can't devote my life and my energy to it now, because everyone knows it's framed as a benevolent dictatorship. Nearly everyone behaves, and if someone kicks off, then everyone else kind of reports them and we get rid of them. So it's lovely. But so there's that. That I kind of cultivate a lot. The Slack group is a bit more organic, and like, when I have a thought at my desk, I'll say, hey, what do we think of this? And people will go, I like the idea. You know, so there could be a lot more going on in Slack than there is, and I occasionally feel guilty that I'm not inspiring people to contribute as much. But equally, it's not invasive, and it's different to an email thing, and it is a bit different. It feels like collaborative, which is what it was supposed to feel like. So when the pandemic started, Slack was fantastic. I was like, can I do this? Can I do that? Can somebody go, I work in VR. Do you want to try VR? Great, I'll try VR. You know, it's absolutely just a blessing. Brilliant. So platform-wise, it started with the donations, which back when they were donations and not a payment for a thing. The donations were recurring on PayPal. I wanted to give them access to a podcast, like an extra, the Extras podcast. There's no way to do that on PayPal. So I would say, okay, right, here's a link to a RSS feed and some instructions, and they're unwieldy. And you get that when you join PayPal. Now, you get that because I cut and paste it into every reply personally. We're not talking tens of thousands of users here. It didn't kill me, but it was a constant pressure in the back of my neck. I was like, oh God, I've got to do that again. So then I wanted to do... Oh, and some people don't like PayPal for ethical reasons. So some people do Moonclerk. So I still have 9 people who pay via Moonclerk, which is like from the last of them joined 4 years ago, you know. But they're my guys. They're my non-gendered guys. And so then I thought, okay, Patreon. I looked into Patreon, and because I was at South By and talked to someone who was like a Patreon guy. And they said... They were changing the way they were like, it's membership brackets running on Patreon or fueled by Patreon, because the word Patreon is unwieldy and difficult. So I was like, great. Oh, so I can have a private podcast via Patreon. And then just before, I thought, I can't shift everyone to Patreon. While I was mulling it over, Patreon had that thing happen where they put their prices up and all the creators went, what? And it kind of shat itself. And that made me think, even though they walked it back, I thought, I don't want it to be in someone else's hands. Yeah. And I don't need to be posting all the time. I just need access to a thing. So for a while, I clunked along going, there's PayPal, and PayPal gets you a cut and paste access to an RSS feed, as does Moonclerk. And Patreon, if you join the Patreon, you get access to the RSS feed for you to type in. And a note from me saying, this is all I use Patreon for. But at least it takes a hurdle out of the way for someone who is already on Patreon.
Yeah.
Because that's the great thing about Patreon. It's frictionless. So if you're already a Patreon person, you see a thing you like, you hit, yeah, I'll pay for that. Great. So that still exists. So I have a bunch of Patreon people. And then I met a man called Mark Moriarty, his real name, excellent guy, in a bar in Edinburgh. And we chatted about what we're doing, and I talked about the podcast, and without revealing he was a fan of the podcast, he said, so how does that all work? And I described to him roughly what I described to you, and he said, and I won't attempt his fabulous Cork accent, he said, it may not be Cork, I'm not sure, but he said, you can't do this anymore, why don't you do what I've got? And basically this was the answer to my prayers. He said, what I do is, he runs a thing called Awesound, AWESOUND, awesound.com.net, whatever. And it hosts podcasts, and it hosts paywall podcast content. So it's all done through Awesound now. And now there's a boring conversation to be had about, oh, do I switch off the PayPal ones? No. Oh, great. Now I've got 4 platforms. So 4 income streams, which later today I'm going to start playing with accounting software 0 for the first time. God. And it is going to be hell. So the plan was all newcomers come via Awesound, and everyone else gets grandfathered in. They will eventually churn and cancel or what have you, but everyone new goes into Awesound. So that's sort of the plan.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously with the introduction over the last few weeks of subscriptions on Apple Podcast and Spotify, Are they something you're looking at as well, or you kind of have?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I've got too much going on in my life, and the system works as it is. Now, you saying that makes me think, oh, I should definitely spend half an hour or so researching it. But I don't, I'm not inclined to, is my answer. I, as a podcaster, am not inclined to go, oh, great, I'll do that, because I've got a thing that works, however clunky, and it is clunky. And, you know, I really put a lot of focus into the community. So when people join, when anyone joins at over the minute, so that's another thing that's in keeping with my kind of values, if you like, is no matter how much you join for, there's an infinitely sliding scale, minimum £2 a month. Whatever you join for, you get the same amount. And it lets people who are low waged get just the same stuff as a CEO. And I love that. And I found out from a friend that Will Anderson does that for his podcast. And he took the idea from me because he loved it. And he's welcome to it. I love Will very much. But that, like, I saw him doing it. I was like, oh, that's cool. I wonder if he did it first. And apparently I found out he was like, Goldsmith doing it. Let's have it. So I really love that. It's totally in keeping with the values of the show as being like, this is a means of democratizing creativity and sharing the secrets of how to be creative and how to cope with being creative.
It's different to kind of on Patreon where you've got the tiers and, you know, you've got like a kind of basic.
Yes, I hate the idea of tiers. I understand it. And I do understand that if I did tiers, I would possibly make more money, because there is the reason they do tiers is they've got a bunch of people in lab coats who are working in lab coats, people, a bunch of millennials with in coffee shops doing a ton of research and realizing tiers is the way to make people pay. Tiers is the way to constantly upsell. You're a fan, you go there thinking I'll pay £2, but you're like, oh, I could get that, or I could get that. And that is a time and a tried and tested technique. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that, and I've painted myself into a corner where I can't easily do that, so I'm not going to. And I like that you might, like, for every person that doesn't upsell to an extra £2 a month, say, I still get a warm, fuzzy feeling every time I remember that it's all available to everybody, because that's important to me, and I think it reflects the values of me and the show. In answer to your original question about Apple and Spotify, my system works for me. Probably, like Patreon, there is sense in me getting on board with the way Apple are doing it, or getting on board with the way Spotify are doing it, in order to scoop people up. But to be honest, I also think there is a value in saying one message to the listener. And if I say on the show in a way that no one can take out of the show, it's baked in, go to comedianscomedian.com/insiders, then that's one simple message and that'll do me. My only regret really is that I called it the Insiders Club, and I've since realised that is a generic name. And there are loads of insiders clubs. I wished I'd called it something like, I don't know what. I don't know what. The problem with them, WTF as a podcast, is because he always starts with what the fuck are Recons, what the fuck are ears, what the fuckstables, all the rest of it. Like any attempt to go com bums or whatever.
Yeah,
anything like that feels like it's kind of WTF inspired. Yeah.
Are you a, you know, take this kind of the wrong way, but are you a podcaster who does comedy? Are you a comedian that does podcasts? I mean, how much of you are those individual bits?
I've put a lot of thought into that, and I don't care anymore is the answer. I don't care anymore. I think for a long time, and that is representative of an uptick in my mental health. Particularly because of the pandemic, I think of myself as different things on different days. The thing I think of myself most as is a comedy-themed entrepreneur, or a comedy-themed solopreneur, I suppose. And again, it's a horrible term, but one of the opportunities afforded me is to be something that no one else is. Like, it was already going that way. Everyone else's podcast is them being funny. Fern Brady and Alison Spittle's Wheel of Misfortune is a brilliant, hilarious comedy podcast where two brilliant, hilarious women are brilliant and hilarious, and it's perfect. It's wonderful. My show isn't me being funny. What my show has taught me over the years is that there is a huge part of my personality which enjoys analysing, or can't help but analyse things, loves asking probing questions of my interviewees, really gets off on helping them overcome creative blocks. That then, during the pandemic, kind of opened up into mentoring comics, not by telling them how to write jokes, God knows I don't know, but by helping them overcome the hurdles, recognising the hurdles that are in the way of them being their most fulfilled creative self. So I was like, what am I now? Am I like a mentor? And then I started doing, a year before the pandemic, I started doing talks to business about what the the distilled insight of all these comedians I've spoken to can teach them about resilience. Started off as sort of a side hustle, if I'm honest, and a dare to myself to see if I can do it. Now, I can't imagine not doing it. I love it, and I do it to everyone. I've done loads of them to a very high level and keep getting asked back, and that is enormously satisfying. So all of these things aren't being a podcaster, and they aren't being a comic. Of course, in my core, I'm a comedian. But I feel comfortable enough in that now that I don't need to shout about it or prove it to anyone, least of all myself. God, this feels nice to say. I couldn't have said this 2 weeks ago. I had a big therapy revelation and I really am like, yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter. I don't need to name myself. And to name myself a particular thing shuts down. It closes doors rather than opening them. So I am, whatever the word is, I am a person who is definitely comedy themed and comedy inflected and comedy inflicted, but I'm an ideas person and I love having ideas, talking about the ideas I've had. Every so often, I think to myself, God, am I really a comedian? Or was the whole journey of me being a comedian, me thinking it was my vocation forever, was that a part of the steps towards becoming whatever it is I am now? And sometimes I think it is and sometimes I think it isn't. You know, same with the podcast. Like, you can look at the podcast and go, this podcast is emblematic of an ideas thinky person who's ended up being a comedian. But what they really want to be is someone who sort of digs for insight and then shares it. Maybe that's my job, because you can take that. Oh, if I'm an insight digger and sharer, then maybe that's what you might end up doing. Like, comedy does that. So yeah, have an idea about something, share it. You too? You like this? You know, Laura Davis, take a piece of your heart, hold it up to the light and go, you too? I like doing that with bits of my head. So maybe that's what I've been all along, and maybe, you know, maybe. But yeah, so that's the first time I've been able to answer that question properly. I am a podcaster and I am a stand-up comedian and I'm loads of other things as well. And all of them fit really neatly, so they never need to be separated.
So if someone asked you that, let's say 2 years ago, you'd say, I'm a comedian.
I'd say, I'm a comedian. I also have a podcast, and it pisses me off that more people know me for my podcast than my comedy. I mean, I wouldn't have admitted that it pisses me off, but on some level, I don't know if pissing me off is the right phrase. But yeah, for sure. That's, you know, for someone, like, I don't think I ever wanted to be a star, but for anyone that wants to work in showbiz at the end of the day, you want to be known for the thing you do. And I felt like my side project suddenly, you know, people care about it all over the world more than they do my comedy. Well, that doesn't mean my comedy is less good. And that was a hump for me to get over. What it means is this thing is more unique and more shareable and more far reaching. And it's more unique. You know, you need a comedian. I can get you a comedian, buddy. I can get you a comedian right now. I could tweet. I need an open mic. I need someone to do 2 minutes of stand-up on a Zoom call right now. And in 4 minutes, we'd have someone. Not because I'm well-connected, but because there are fucking loads of comedians. There are loads of comedy podcasts, not as many as there are comics. But within comedy podcasts, ones that actually listen. Whoa, that's zoomed it right down. Ones that actually listen and ask sort of informed questions that aren't just on a list, but are, no disrespect to your list, but are kind of rolling questions that go, oh, we're into that now. That is getting very, whittling it right down. So it isn't that my podcast's better than my comedy. It's just it's way more unique. As a result, it's way more shareable and marketable and all those sorts of things.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a comedian's point of view, like I said, I'm interested in comedy as a thing as well as the whole business stuff. So, I mean, as a comedian, I mean, how much level of satisfaction do you get in different types of joke, you know, versus the big, you know, guttural laugh versus something that someone's still thinking about in 2 weeks, 2 months' time? Because, I mean, something I kind of think about was, you know, often comes back to me is Frank Skinner bit, where he's kind of saying, you know, you can do all this kind of analysis, but nothing's funnier than this. And it cuts to him dancing in his pants to the Venga Boys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got that kind of level of, you know, what kind of laugh kind of enriches you most?
What a lovely question. What kind of laugh enriches me most? I think I've got an honest answer for this. Here is, I think, my honest answer to that question. I don't care. What I care about, if I'm honest, is whether or not I told the truth in a way that I found cathartic. Like, I've got a bit at the moment about standing in... No, I've got a bit that barely even... Is it a bit? What is it? Is it work? I've got a bit about the feeling you have when you stand looking out at the ocean and you feel too big for yourself and your emotions are too big to understand them. And often that bit, and it was developed kind of just before the pandemic, so it's not run in, it's not trained, I've done it online once or twice. I can't stop thinking about it because I mean it, and it's a thing I don't think anyone else has touched subject matter wise, which is sort of plays into it some way. But it's me trying to get a fucking piece of my real heart and go, you know this, and then write jokes about that. There's not many jokes I've got about it. I've got some, you know, the joke about like that feeling, and I try and sum it up as, oh, the Germans probably have a word for it, and then try and come up with what, like an anglicised German version. That's sort of a joke or getting towards one. But if they laugh a bit, or if they kill themselves laughing, obviously I care, but that isn't why I'm doing it. And that is maybe in to my detriment as a comic in some ways, because my quality control is not as high as some of your comics out there. I don't endlessly obsess over the minutiae of stuff because my passion is in trying to go, I'm obsessed with whether they know who I am or they understand who I am or whether I do. Am I an insider? Am I an outsider? Who do you see me as? Who do I see myself as? Those are the things they're shot through me like a stick of rock. You know, I can't take them out of me. So when I go, this bit, you know when you do that? If they titter, if they laugh, that isn't good enough and I've got to work on it. If they laugh, that's great. If they bend over slapping their thighs, that's great too, but that's not my obsession. And I think that's probably why I'll never be one of the greats, because I don't care whether they kill themselves laughing, you know. And also, I mean I do care, but I know people who will not sleep until that laugh is perfect, and I've been that. But I realized that, oh, that was me defending myself. I'd rather get a thing out and then get on to getting the next thing out, like getting it out. So I think that's what I think about that.
Huge thanks to Stu for his time. You can find him at comedianscomedian.com, at comcompod on Twitter, and at his Comedians Comedian podcast group on Facebook. Thanks for listening.